You're on Texas Standard Time.
Last Friday, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced the Department of Justice would be cracking down on the, quote, culture of leaking that's besieged the Trump administration. Sessions says compared to the Obama administration, the Justice Department has more than tripled investigations into leaks since Donald Trump took office, and he promised the DOJ would not hesitate to prosecute leakers of classified information. So how does the number of leaks coming out of the Trump White House stack up to past administrations? And what can the Department of Justice really do to address it? Joining us now is Bobby Chesney. He's the director of the Robert Strauss Center for International Security and Law at the University of Texas. Professor Chesney, thanks for coming on the Texas Standard.
Thanks for having me on.
So how do the leaks that come out of the Trump administration compare to the White House administrations of the past?
Well, I guess you have to begin by acknowledging that leaks are not new to Washington. This is the oldest game in Washington. Leaks have been there all along, and it's always considered a crisis. But that said, it really seems like we've entered into a new period here where there is more leaking than in the past and more conversation like we're having right now about what it means.
Now, more broadly, how has the nature of leaking information evolved over the years? How have advances of technology, you know, changed how easy it is to leak, or alternatively, maybe that same technology is making it easier to get caught?
Well, it's a little bit of both, right? So some would say it's the golden age of leaking, but it's also the golden age of investigations. It's simultaneously both. I think that you're really smart to mention the technology change, though. I mean, you're in media. You know better than I do how much technological change has disrupted the entire media space. And when we think about what that means for leaks, if we think back to something like, you know, the Pentagon Papers and sort of the paradigm of investigative journalism in the 1970s and what it would look like when somebody in government wants to put out into the public sphere through the media some sensitive bit of government information, there is this checking function that you kind of imagine, you know, Ben Bradley or somebody at the Washington Post, sort of this elite, well-informed person kind of making a judgment about whether that media outlet should really go forward and publish that sensitive information. And of course, there's plenty of ways you can either defend or critique that. I'm just trying to contrast it, because these days, if you have something, if you're Edward Snowden and you have all this stuff you've gotten from the NSA and you want to put it out there, and you can go to the Washington Post, and if they don't want to publish some of it, well, then you can turn to a foreign newspaper, go to the Guardian in the UK. And if they don't want to do it, well, maybe go over to Der Spiegel in Germany. And if they don't want to do it, well, maybe just go to WikiLeaks and see if Julian Assange will help you out.
What actions have presidents taken in the past to crack down on leaks?
Well, there's an array of ways, a lot of tools in the executive branch's hands, and everyone tends to focus on, you know, will somebody be prosecuted? In the first instance, that's really not the main thing. The main tool is the repercussions for the leaking government employee for their own career. Right? You're going to lose your job, or you can lose your job, depending on whether you're a whistleblower or not and can achieve those kinds of protections. If you're leaking classified information, then you're going to lose your clearance, or at least in the old days, you would lose your clearance, perhaps. And then beyond those things, in much more serious cases, then there's the possibility of a prosecution. And for a long time, we've had this body of laws. We generally refer to it as the Espionage Act, and it's got a bunch of different provisions in it, mainly designed to protect not just all secret government information, but national defense information and certain types of intelligence information. And there, you know, you do occasionally have people prosecuted for leaking this information. You don't have reporters prosecuted for publishing that information. That's a different deal. That's a really important distinction.
As far as the press goes, though, and this talk of issuing subpoenas for sources from reporters, what are the protections for the press?
As I said a moment ago, they've never in the past, the federal government's never prosecuted a journalist as a co-conspirator for actually leaking the information. And I don't think that's what they were signaling they were going to do here. The much more serious possibility is that they're going to be more aggressive in subpoenaing journalists to try to compel them to disclose their sources so that they can go after the actual government employee who's leaking the information. So this raises a bunch of questions. First of all, you might think, well, doesn't the First Amendment protect journalists in this way? Actually, that's not the case law. The Supreme Court in this case called Brandsburg was closely divided on this issue, and depends on, there's a debate about exactly how to interpret it, but it certainly didn't recognize a reporter's privilege. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in a leak subpoena case not that long ago during the Obama administration issued the same kind of ruling in a case involving New York Times reporter Jim Risen. So what has constrained DOJ from constantly subpoenaing reporters? And the answer is discretion in politics, the sense that legal or not, there's going to be a real price to pay. And as some people would say, you ought not to pick a fight with people who buy ink by the barrel.
Bobby Chesney is the director of the Robert Strauss Center for International Security and Law at UT Austin. Professor Chesney, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.